Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters, episode 892 for today, Friday the 11th of April, 2024. I'm your host, Connor, joined by Carl.
Hello.
And Jess Gill.
Hello.
And today we're going to be discussing how you can't let people get away with rewriting history after the release of the cast report, O.J. Simpson's racialized death, Goodnight Sweet Prince, and what is it, based French women versus undocumented sex enthusiasts? I'm looking forward to that one. Speaking of things we should look forward to, if you are a premium subscriber, remember it is a Friday, and on Friday afternoons at 3 o'clock, we usually have Lad's Hour. And this week, we are going to be asking the question, why don't you have an interior monologue? Carl has got this one. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, some people do, some people don't. We will find out all about it then.
Fantastic. I'm sure nothing incriminating will be said in those 90 minutes. Again, if you haven't subscribed yet, still time, then you can watch it live. But without further ado, I wanted to talk about the release of the cast report. Now, the cast report came out. It didn't really tell us sitting around this table or many of our viewers things that we didn't already know. But I think it's interesting to go for its findings and then see the reaction to it, because you're going to be seeing now that this sort of landmark report has come out, a lot of backpedaling on the transgender issue.
Ah.
I am going to attempt to be as diplomatic about this as possible for the sake of remaining on YouTube so we can keep the word out about this. Because I think it's very important to share the information to make sure that people do not get away with the positions they were saying up until 2 days ago, which has measurably harmed quite a few children. Now, this is the report itself. You can go and download the PDF of it. I thought I'd give some summaries from here. For those who don't know, outside the UK, where this has been a big issue, the original report was commissioned by NHS England in September 2020 after the Keira Bell case from the Tavistock Clinic that said that they were putting kids on a pathway to receiving puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones without adequate therapeutic vetting beforehand. The interim report was released in 2022, and the findings were so damning that it led to planned closure of the Tavistock Clinic in 2023. This was the sole gender identity discovery service clinic in the UK. It was set for 2023 closure, and it was then elongated to start setting up two regional satellite clinics in the Northwest and in London. So Tavistock closed on the 1st of April. Ironic, and those two clinics have since opened up. Sorry to report that people involved in the failures of Tavistock have since been appointed the heads of those substitute clinics, so I won't hold my breath at things being fixed to help these vulnerable children. NHS accepted the findings last year and have since implemented them in March, preventing the prescription of puberty blockers to vulnerable young children, except in the case of clinical trials. And I think, unfortunately, we're probably going to see the numbers of clinical trials start to rise. So among the findings, which were once dismissed as conspiracy theories, as we who have befriended detransitioners or, you know, read Hannah Barnes's book here well know, it's unpopular to be right, but it turns out we were, the sort of 4,400% increase in the last 14 years of adolescent girls identifying as having gender dysphoria was not a purely organic phenomena. It was a subject of multiple comorbidities, including autism, suicidality, familial abuse, especially in care homes, things like that, which is quite distressing. So again, we knew this. We were talking about it. You were shut down.
Yeah, I remember when I was in high school, in secondary school, there was this girl. I was in the the teacher's office, like having a strop about something dramatic. And there was this girl who brought a knife into school. And we had this conversation. She was telling me all about her problems with like her stepdad, like all these kind of issues. She said she was like a lesbian, all that kind of stuff. A year later, I go back to this teacher, and she's there again. But now she's a he, and he wants to start this like LGBTQ+ club. And the people, the students in that, again, you could tell they were coming from troubled backgrounds, and these kids need support. But instead, we're telling them to chop off the genitals, pretty much.
Yeah, you've been funneled into a identity-based social group which overlooks the social circumstances which may have led you to identify with that in the first place, which unfortunately does entail a lot of familial abuse. It is important here, actually, Cass does use the term social contagion. She doesn't use the term rapid onset gender dysphoria developed by Lisa Littman. So I think she's trying to play a middle ground here and not adopt the terms of people who have been categorized as TERFs or on the right, who have been right about this issue. She's trying to avoid politicized terms.
It's so crazy, but it's common sense, though. Like, I can't believe it's controversial to say these things, that you should be seen as like mentally ill if you want to chop off your genitals. Like, how is that controversial to say when you actually get it like down to what transgenderism is? Like, how do we allow this? How is this acceptable?
It's not particularly kind to these vulnerable people, no. So in here it says, the systematic review showed no clear evidence that social transition in childhood has any positive or negative mental health outcomes. No negative mental health outcomes of social transition in childhood.
I mean, maybe they're doing it proportionally. They began at a fairly low position of mental health and it doesn't seem to make it better or worse.
Yes, and also...
you could double down as well. Like, if you go for all this stuff, like, maybe you sort of have to, like, cope.
Yeah, it's kind of a sunk cost fallacy, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, especially when the overwhelming number of people seen by the Tavistock Clinic that were socially affirmed then went on to take cross-sex hormones and then went on to take puberty blockers. Whereas if you let them watchfully wait without any social intervention or social transitioning, the detransition rates are between 60 to 90%. The average age is, average rate is about 80% from the studies that I've seen. Relatively weak evidence for any effect in adolescents for social transitioning. Those who have socially transitioned at an earlier age and or prior to being seen in the clinic were more likely to proceed to a medical pathway. And it also said, the review has heard from GPs who have been put under pressure to continue prescribing such treatments as puberty blockers on the basis that failing to do so will put young people at risk of suicides. There is emotional blackmail within the institution that prevented a bunch of people coming out and whistleblowing. So some of Cass's recommendations for policies have included a, quote, holistic assessment for children presenting with gender dysphoria. So that's screenings for other mental health conditions. We know that from the Tavistock's internal report from Hannah Barnes's book, it was conducted in the 90s before there were a lot more cases. There's 5 to 6 other mental comorbidities went along with gender dysphoria. So just treating that doesn't allow those to be addressed. It urged the clinicians to ensure that, quote, when families are making decisions about social transitioning, it's important parents are not unconsciously influencing the child's gender expression. Look out for Munchausen by proxy syndrome, funnily enough.
But also, even when the parents are against it, like, I remember reading Time to Think in Hannah Barnes's book, and wasn't there, like, a case of this kid who just wouldn't, like, shower or something, and he was taken in by the authorities, and the mum was like, no, he just has an issue of, like, OCD or autism or something. And they were so insistent to try and make him trans that they were trying to, like, separate him from the mum.
Yes.
Like, that's so insane.
Yeah, it's very cruel. Also, Munchausen by proxy syndrome, ironically, was a phrase coined by John Money.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a little bit of universal irony happening there. She also said the NHS should implement a full program of research for effective care for gender-distressed adolescents, such as this is an area of remarkably weak evidence, and yet results of studies are exaggerated or misrepresented by people on all sides of the debate to support their viewpoint. Trying to be very middle of the road. The reality is that we have no good evidence on the long-term outcomes of interventions to manage gender-related distress. Also recommended that children not be given puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones outside of those clinical trials. Watch out for the numbers of clinical trials that are going to be happening. And that all children should be offered fertility counselling and preservation prior to going to a medical pathway. Fertility preservation.
What do they mean by that?
That means freezing your eggs or freezing your sperm.
Yeah.
But how, as like a young person, would you be able to know whether you want kids or not? Like, I'm sure a lot of these young people probably don't want kids, and then they'll probably later regress it in later life.
Also, it's not a guaranteed process.
No, and it's also introducing more technological pitfalls for going down the pathway of having children in future, which inflict unforeseen costs both on the children and the prospective parents. So it's not very good. And she also called for a clinical detransition protocol, because that doesn't exist, despite the detransition rate cited by one of the Tavistock clinicians being 30%. Not 1%. So 30% of their patients who discontinued treatment are just not being serviced, which isn't very good. So this is why the NHS is now set to review all its transgender treatment protocols. Rishi Sunak has welcomed the recommendations, highlighting the sharp rise in recent years in children, particularly adolescent girls, questioning their gender. Now, this report only applies to England and Wales, because NHS Scotland is a very different thing. Scotland are currently trying to make all of the recommendations that Cass made, like the complete opposite, currently in law. So they're trying to lower the age at which people can get cross-sex hormones and gender surgeries. Obviously, the permeable border between England and Scotland, I wouldn't be surprised if people just stop traveling upwards, which is worrying. But none of this paints a picture of how bad it was at Tavistock. So as I've referenced Hannah Barnes' book here, here's the original article. It's linked down in the description. I also recommend getting her book. From her book, Tired to Think, I've just pulled out a few extracts just to illustrate the picture to our viewers overseas. The rate of the gender identity discovery clinic referrals were increasing for years at a rate of 50% per year since 2009. And we're now arriving at a rate of more than 100 per month in 2015. It was almost impossible to process them. Over the course of 2015 and 16, referrals doubled to 1,419. Between 2009 and 2015, GIDS said no to just 2% of those referred. So they weren't turning away many of the patients. They were diagnosing gender dysphoria in the majority of the patients, despite the exponential rise in identification. Mm. And No alarm bells were raised from the top. They were among clinicians, but those were silenced. The number of girls seeking help had equaled the number of boys for the first time in 2011. Its caseload had been nearly three-quarters male for those referred in childhood, or two-thirds overall. Referrals for natal girls made up 65% of the total by 2015. In 2019 to 20, girls outnumbered boys by a ratio of 6-1 in some age groups, most markedly between the ages of 12 and 14. This is after the advent of smartphones. Unfortunately, you may be able to corroborate, some adolescent young girls are led astray by social contagion.
I do think it's also guys as well, though. Like, I have a friend, and over lockdown, he's always been a bit strange, like, been a bit like of an outcast, and bullied at school and all that kind of stuff. Like, I remember in year five, we went on a school trip to, like, France. I didn't go, but my friends went. And apparently he tried to kill himself in year five. And it's like, this is probably, like, what, how old are you in year five? Like, nine?
Yeah.
Like, and he's already having these thoughts. And then lockdown happened. And then he came to me, we were at the bus stop, and he was just like, oh, I think I'm confused. And I was like, what do you mean by that? He's like, I think I'm gender fluid. I was like, okay, what do you mean? And it was like, I don't know, I'm confused. It's like, surely if you want to change your gender, you should have a firmer grasp of what that actually means. Mm. And he's doubled down on it now. He goes by a different name. He has like this, like, bio off his like gender and pronouns and all this kind of stuff. It's really weird, and this is like, this is my friend, this is someone who needs this help, and he's being failed by our institutions, he's being failed by the schools, and probably if he went to Tavistock they probably wouldn't question it, when all he needs is his support.
Yeah, I had someone close to me who came from an abusive home, was using transgender ideology to essentially escape themselves because they blamed themselves for having abuse inflicted on them by family members. And they said, if I would have been given medical transition, then this would have put me on a path that I could not have averted, rather than address the issues that are afflicting me and in my own household. So to cover up for that is just wrong. In 2012, a caseload review found that the associated difficulties included with this ideology, non-suicidal self-harm, suicidal ideation, suicide attempts, autism spectrum conditions, ADHD, and symptoms of anxiety, psychosis, eating disorders, bullying, and abuse, among other things. So that's exactly what they're overlooking here. And in 2015 to 2016, there were more than six times as many young people referred as featured in the review that they've just cited. So those were the issues before the exponential explosion. So you think this would probably alarm the clinicians that were working there?
No.
They might want to alert some of the authorities?
I wouldn't think that at all, because what I think that they think is that what they're dealing with is a political constituency that isn't self-replicating, and so they need to recruit into it.
That is certainly the case for some of the heads, definitely. I would just think, though, considering this is now irrefutable evidence, the fact that these kids have also got unaddressed abuse issues, you'd think now that that's been brought to light. If not for pure self-preservation, you would go for it. Well, if you look at the CAS report, in it, CAS teamed up with the University of York to attempt to run a study on the patients at Tavistock since that audit, so an updated one. And it was stopped because, and I quote from the CAS report, conduct of the study was contingent on gaining access to the relevant patient data and securing the full cooperation of the gender identity clinics. The research team contacted clinical leads at GIDS and each of the adult gender identity clinics that worked with Tavistock. Negotiations took place between August and November 2023, after which six of the seven adult identity clinics declined to support the study. They just chose not to.
Yeah.
The reason, they cited, was the difficulty of gathering data.
This is going to be ruinous to our case.
Yeah. So they said it was too difficult and too costly to gather the data. However, again, in Barnes's book, we do know that even in court proceedings, when they were asked to hand over documents, they said, we don't have them. And then it later turned out they did have them. They knew they had them and they just didn't want to turn them over. So there is an institutional cover-up conducted by certain people within Tavistock here for ideological and financial gain.
Yeah,
certainly. But we have a comment from Cass, actually, printed in The Guardian of all places. And this is what I mean by the fact that this has reached a fever pitch and now it's undeniable. And Cass said, it was unbelievably disappointing that the research study she'd hoped to conduct to look at the outcomes of 9,000 former patients had been blocked by the clinics. The former health secretary, Sajid Javid, changed legislation to allow researchers to link pre- and post-transition NHS numbers, because this was previously prevented. But the research had to be abandoned when all but one of the clinics refused to cooperate. Cass said, I do think it was coordinated. It seemed to me ideologically driven. There was no substantive reason behind it, so I can only really conclude that it was because they didn't feel that it was the right thing to do to try and nail down the data. Oh. Your reading was spot on.
What a surprise.
Yeah. Now, for once, the government's actually going to take action on this.
Oh, wow, really?
So this is the Health Secretary, Victoria Atkins, and she met with Amanda Pritchard, who's the Chief Executive of NHS England, and she told her nothing less than full cooperation by those clinics in the research is acceptable. Writing for The Telegraph and explaining what she's going to do, she said she's had enough of a culture of secrecy and ideology over evidence and safety. Sajid Javid told The Telegraph, despite it being the unanimous will of Parliament, it is a clear vested interest have deliberately frustrated the important data access legislation that he brought forward to support Dr. Cass's review. A no-holds-barred government investigation must be launched into this obfuscation, documents retrieved, and if necessary, individuals held accountable for failing to provide records. I know he has to say if necessary there. No, this should come with criminal penalties because you have confiscated, in some cases, the lives or at least the potential to have families from multiple children. If you're now withholding the documents from that, well, that's nothing less than contemptible and should be legally held as such. Now, if you want to know who was behind this, here are some of the names you can blame. This comes, of course, from Hannah's book and also this helpful Mail Online article with lots of photos. Let's scroll down to Polly Carmichael. She's like the arch villain of the Tavistock Clinic. So she was the director of GIDS for multiple years. She oversaw lots of failings. She aided, at least, she denies it, of course. She aided in discouraging whistleblowers from coming forward. So, for example, in 2021, social worker Sonia Appleby, who was head of safeguarding at Tavistock, won £20,000 in damages after being shunned when she raised concerns about puberty blockers. Throughout Barnes's book, Carmichael denies doing this, but we have lots of corroborations. Carmichael blocked the implementation of the findings of a review by Dr. Femi Ingezu, which recommended that GIDS needed to, quote, take the courageous and realistic action of capping the number of referrals immediately. This was years before the Keira Bell situation brought this to light. In 2016, an internal study by Tavistock revealed puberty blockers were increasing suicidal ideation in patients. So under her watch, they knew puberty blockers were making kids more suicidal. Carmichael made no changes to the protocol. Clinicians have also testified under oath that Carmichael herself personally intervened in cases where children were showing significant distress to causes other than gender dysphoria and insisted on giving them puberty blockers.
How could you be this evil? Like, I don't understand the mentality of someone like this.
It's very devouring mother energy. She once went on CBBC and told an audience of children that puberty blockers were wholly reversal as well. So she was just insistent on getting the message out there to impressionable kids.
Yeah, just persistent liar.
Yeah, quite, yeah.
Sort of Cruella de Vil sort of figure here.
Yeah, quite. On the claim, there was the dark joke in GIDS. Do you remember, there'll be no gay kids left by the time we're done?
Yeah.
The clinicians that reported this were Matt Bristow and Anastasis Spilaldis, and both of those are gay men. And they claimed that Polly Carmichael had implied that because of their sexuality, they were unable to be as objective as a heterosexual member of staff. So they were raising concerns about gay kids being transitioned when they were gender confused because of their sexuality or budding sexuality rather than their sex. And Carmichael said, you're at risk of dismissal if you complain about this.
Amazing.
Yeah, not good. Despite a round of sacking, she retained her job until Tavistock shut. She got a 80 grand payout.
Of course she did.
And she's now head of the Great Ormond Street London Satellite Clinic. So after all these failings, she's now head of one of the regional clinics they've set up instead of Tavistock.
It is amazing that these people just fail upwards, isn't it?
Yeah, it's genuinely evil. It's like they want to continue this happening to kill children. This article also...
Well, they absolutely do want to. They do want to.
Well, I tell you who definitely...
No question of it.
Down here is Dr. Helen Weberly, right? So Helen Weberly and her husband are head of Gender GP. Now, this is where the former head of Mermaid, Susie Green, slunk off to. And Polly Carmichael used to have Susie Green come into meetings. And there was... She denied this existed, but then a Freedom of Information request turned up a 3,000 email chain with her and Susie Green. Susie Green having taken her teenage son at age 14, I think, to Thailand to have gender reconstruction surgery, where Susie Green was lobbying to have the age at which cross-sex hormones could be lowered to below 16.
Right.
This woman now works with her. And she's now the leading provider of puberty blockers in private practices. Because this guidance only applies to NHS England. If you go outside and pay for private practices, you can still have kids prescribed puberty blockers. In 2018, she was convicted of running an independent medical agency without being registered and fined 12 grand. In 2022, she was suspended by the Medical Practitioners Tribunal Service over a range of charges that included to fail to provide good care in 2016 for three female patients aged 11, 12, and 17 who were transitioning to being male. In its determination, the panel found that 36 allegations, including failing to provide adequate follow-up care to a 12-year-old who was prescribed testosterone, were proved. A year later, the suspension was overruled by the High Court, so she's just allowed to practice. However, her husband was removed from the UK Medical Register in another tribunal in 2022 because he committed a catalogue of failings, that's a direct quote, in relation to his care of seven patients between February 2017 and June 2019. One was aged 9 years old, with another, a teenager, killing themselves in the months that followed. So these are the people that are going to be in charge of trans-affirming care in the UK from now on. I think, therefore, flat-out bans and criminal investigations must start. Politicians are guilty too, though. This is the purpose of this segment. Don't let the memory hold their own record. Because as of 2 days ago, this was all okay. It was transphobic bigotry to suggest otherwise. And then as soon as the Cass report comes out, the Labour Party get on the media circuit. And
Yvette Cooper's just...
Oh, listen, let's listen to Yvette Cooper for a minute, shall we?
How could we be giving kids puberty blockers for 20 years?
I know, this is very troubling. The report is very clear that children and young people have been badly let down and have been receiving treatment that's not based on evidence. So I think the Cass review is really important. We welcome it. Labour accepts all of its recommendations. I think they should be implemented now as swiftly as possible. And we would like to work with the government on doing that.
And what would you like to say to those doctors, clinicians, who felt that they couldn't speak out because if they did, they would be victimised?
Well, I hope that this report really is a watershed moment for the NHS, for NHS gender services, because this is, the report's clear. It's basically talking about evidence, focusing on children's welfare and not having all of this get caught up in culture wars or in different kinds of those debates, instead be able to.
I'm going to pause that there before I punch the screen.
Just to be clear, the Tavistock was set up under Tony Blair. In the Labour Party, right?
No. It's well older than that.
Is it?
Yeah, late 60s to the 80s.
Or has this been...
You're thinking the Gender Recognition Act that was set up by Tony Blair, which then instantiated it in law.
Right, okay.
So, just a thing.
It's not like she hasn't been a part of this, is what I'm saying.
But her husband, Ed Balls, goes on Good Morning Britain pretty much every morning and argues with the TERFs and gender critical types and traditionalists and parents who bereaved of their children because they were swept in by this ideology and calls them transphobic bigots. Annalise Dodds, the Shadow Women and Equalities Minister who's still sitting in cabinet up until 2 days ago, has suddenly become very quiet, was lobbying to make it easier for children to access this. Her entire party, other than Rosie Duffield, and I have mixed feelings on Rosie personally, but she was treated very badly by the grassroots activists and fellow MPs for being the only person that was saying, oh, maybe we shouldn't go down this road. And now that this evidence has become popular to talk about, even though we had all the evidence for multiple years and multiple people were talking about it,
and if,
now
if are you didn't, why were you record? Why were you doing anything if you didn't have any evidence that it was going to do anything good? It's insufferable.
Yeah, it's contemptible. Also, Shadow Health Secretary, future Health Secretary, probably, given the polls, Wes Streeting, himself a gay man, so, you know, not very wise to be backing the Tavistock Clinic there, has also repeated the line, this can't be swept up in a culture war. Wes, what you were dismissing as a culture war about 2 days ago and will continue to dismiss for other issues was the entire reason it led up to this point. Mm. All the whistleblowers were dismissed as culture warriors. All of the gender-critical feminists who were worried about being assaulted in toilets were dismissed as culture warriors. And now, suddenly when it's become a peak public salience and too costly for your career, you've jumped on the bandwagon and have moved the dialectic across to let this fall out of the culture war, to make yourself look better.
I hate this as an excuse as well, because of the culture of Tavistock that was the problem.
Yes.
Mm. Like, okay, yeah, no, there's a massive problem with the culture there. Yeah, yeah, so there should be people fighting against that culture in a culture war. Culture wars are a good thing. If the culture's bad, what do you want?
Yeah, quite. And as much as I will say there have been some Conservative politicians very good on this, Nick Fletcher, Miriam Cates, Liz Truss, etc., the Conservative Party are equally as guilty. Quietly, this week, ahead of the publication of the Cass report, Rishi Sunak has killed his conversion therapy ban, which would have banned therapists from affirming the biological sex of a child in therapy, and instead set as legal precedent the only true therapy to be affirming the gender identity. Quietly, he's killed that off. Because for anyone who doesn't know, the government was committed to doing a draft bill of this. It was expected in a prior King's speech, but it wasn't included, thanks to, I think, Danny Kruger and the like pushing it out. And it was meant to be put through in January, and now it's not going to be put forward to the joint committee because folks like Kemi Badenoch has done something useful for once and told him, this is going to be terrible for you. And yet again, now the Cass report is out, it's so costly, they've just quietly slunk off. They're going to pretend that they never endorsed this. But they did. Both parties did. And so they're equally liable for every single kid that has been mistreated by Tavistock.
Nothing to add, I'm afraid. It's just insufferable to see, isn't it?
It's infuriating.
God damn it. It's really annoying. Can I have the mouse?
Oh, yes, of course. Yep.
Do you guys know who O.J. Simpson is?
So, as with all things from the 90s, I get my references from comedy shows. Yeah. So, via Dave Chappelle and Norm Macdonald, yes, but that's about it.
Oh, I actually know him through Family Guy memes.
Okay, well, he died yesterday.
Yes.
If you didn't know who he was, you can go to USA Today. Former football star, actor, and sportscaster, O.J. Simpson, dies at 76. Died of, I can't remember.
Prostate cancer.
That's it. I kept thinking pancreatic for some reason.
Clearly his proctologist's gloves couldn't fit.
That's the joke that's going around. But he died at 76 yesterday. And is there anything you're leaving off of that, USA Today? You've got to dig into it to get to the trial, of course. This was the biggest trial of the 90s. And people seem to forget that this was insanely racialized. And so I thought we'd just go over some of the things that were done then and the way it's being talked about now, because, of course, the wound is still festering because he's obviously guilty, right? He's obviously done it. Everyone knows he's done it. And it seems that he was let off because he was black.
Didn't he write a book saying, "If I did it"? Sorry.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah. He co-wrote it with the Pablo Fengevs, or however it was, ghostwritten for him. But it was based on an interview with him. And it's about his alleged involvement. How he it's a hypothetical account of how he would have killed his wife and Ronald Goldman, and Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, if he were to have done it.
I'm sure he had absolutely no first-hand knowledge of exactly how that would have gone down.
He obviously did it, and everyone knows he did it, right? And, you know, this is his wife with his kids. It's just murdered her and walked around free for another 30 years afterwards, which is pretty bad. So I thought we'd give some of the reactions. And this is from Oprah at the time. They were watching it live, of course. You can see
yes,
certain constituencies in the audience who are like, "Wow, that's a massive miscarriage of justice," and others who are quite thrilled about it. Not that lady, though. But this is divided along certain lines.
Yeah, as Ash Sarkar would have said back then, "We're winning, lads."
Yeah. Yeah. You can see that this was mildly controversial. And then years afterwards, the jurors were interviewed. And this is an interview from one of them. And I think we'll just watch this.
Do you think that they're members of the jury that voted to acquit OJ because of Rodney King?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
How many of you think felt that way?
Oh, probably 90%.
90%? Did you feel that way?
Yes.
That was payback.
Uh-huh.
You think that's right?
Okay, they just hate white people.
She knows M, right? She knows it's an evil thing. For anyone who doesn't know, Rodney King was caught being beaten on tape by the LAPD in the early 90s. I can't remember exactly what year.
Harry has a great video on it on the website.
Harry has a great video on it. And this obviously resonated with the black community. And so 90% of the black jurors were like, "No, this is what you're going to get for the beating of Rodney King." O.J. Simpson brutally murdered his wife. He'd almost decapitated her with a knife. It's genuinely horrific. Like, really, really bad.
Then he was engaged in a high-speed chase.
Yeah, then he was, yeah, which is a famous high-speed chase. And then he was arrested. And so, I mean, you can just dig back through the archives and find the kind of reporting that they were doing then. And it's not very different to the kind of reporting they're doing now. You can see there, during the murder trial, which held up a cracked mirror to black and white America, capital B in the black there, in 1997, civil suit, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, this is, you know, he's the victim, is the implication.
It's so weird how you can remove, like, the personalized aspects, like someone being brutally murdered, and just turn it into a political thing. Like, that is so crazy how we can do that as people.
Well, I don't think we do that, though. I think this shows that essentially the Anglo-American justice system, the common law system, is predicated on the morality of the individual, whereas many other cultures and peoples practice collective punishment.
Yeah.
We can see that playing out on the global stage at the moment. But in this microcosm, with the George Floyd trial, for example, we have many scapegoats on behalf of capital W white Americans, as that's how they see it, because the black community doesn't like them. And therefore, they must be sacrificed even if they didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. Just to be clear, I actually put the wrong link in here. So this is actually a recent one, but there was one that I don't have offhand. But anyway, so I found the one person on Earth who thought O.J. Simpson was innocent. Turns out it was Tariq Nasheed, a black activist, obviously, who is a lone voice in the wilderness, packed with people who did think he did it and that it was good that he got away with it. For example, the LA Times were just like, yeah. This is a recent article, obviously, about it. And I'm just going to quote a bit from it because it's just, there are definitely two ways, it's exactly what you say, there are two ways of looking at this. And one community is looking at it in one way, one community is looking at it in another way. And so you have this massive glaring injustice in everyone's face. And so what can you do about it? So the journalist here spoke to a black man, capital B, who worked in LA in 1995. And when the verdict was delivered, the black man told me he and his co-workers were glued to the TV just like everyone else in America. He recounted calmly and quietly walking outside, making sure, looking around to make sure no one was looking around, and then cheering, quote, "I didn't want to scare all the white people," he told me. It's not that he necessarily believed that Simpson was innocent. He obviously didn't think he was innocent. In fact, that was beside the point. He was just happy at last, after the explosive fallout of a jury acquitting the white LAPD officers who beat Rodney King, a black man had finally beaten the odds of a systemically racist criminal justice system.
Yep. This is not about individual morality. This is about in-group preference.
This isn't about right or wrong at all.
No. It's about ethnic advantage.
Yeah. I mean, how many rich white people are guilty and go free in this country every day? I don't know. How many?
Did they decapitate their wife and a waiter?
Yeah. I mean, one rich black man killed his wife and went free. So we know there's at least one. But I don't know, what are the numbers?
But also I don't know many white people who are saying, yeah, white guy, you show them. Like, if some Wall Street exec gets off from... No, we actually
can't
care about justice and the rule of law. Like,
yeah, it's crazy. And so they say it wasn't until 2015 that the racial divide over whether he was definitely or probably guilty had finally narrowed. So obviously, white Americans thought he was guilty. Black Americans thought he wasn't guilty, but that's narrowed. So now 83% of white Americans say that he's committed murder, with compared to 57% of black Americans who think he also did it. So that's still 43% of black Americans are like, nah, he's innocent. Okay. But the thing is, let's say that Tariq Nasheed does represent a constituency, but let's talk about the other side of that constituency who think that he did do it and just think it was a good thing that he got away from it. Right, so you've got Mark Lamont Hill here. You remember who Mark Lamont Hill is? Right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Critical race theorist, anti-white activist, I think is a fair characterization. Says O.J. Simpson was an abusive liar. Yep. Who abandoned his community. Yep. Long before he killed two people in cold blood. Yep. His acquittal for murder was the correct and necessary result of a racist criminal legal system. He's still a monster, but not a martyr.
What's really important to me there is, among the charges of lying and murder, he abandoned his community. Ooh. So he's essentially saying, by becoming rich, moving away from the black inner city,
marrying a white woman.
Yeah, you're a race traitor.
Yeah, that's what he's calling you.
Yeah.
That's the problem, right? It's good that he was acquitted for the murder, obviously. You know, it doesn't matter that he murdered someone. It was required for some reason, is the correct and necessary result of a racist criminal justice system. Well, no, I would have thought the correct and necessary result would be convict the murderer, regardless of how racist the system was.
Yeah, that, and also I don't think an interracial marriage is as bad as double murder.
Weirdly.
Far right position, I suppose.
Yeah,
I
mean, weirdly, I'm not bothered by that fact. But this is just mental. And then he look at the reply here. You think his acquittal was necessary? The police were caught lying. It's like, you just said that he did it. You just said he killed two people in cold blood. You know, how that produced reasonable doubt. How does that make me a racist?
Well, not among the jurors, clearly, because they all thought he did it.
Yeah, they all thought he did it. It's just they didn't care. And, I mean, you get other amazing, amazing takes like this one. Caroline Bryant got away after confessing to having Emmett Till lynched White people have been protecting her whole life. Never spoke ill of her name. O.J. Simpson was racially railroaded and still acquitted. Rest in peace, O.J.
Have you seen this whole thing about, like, I think it's called, they call it white women's tears?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is so toxic. Like, these are the same people who call themselves feminists. They just disregard, like, white women's tears because they're accusing minorities of certain things as if, like, minorities can't commit crimes.
Well, also, if we're talking about intergenerational justice, and I do not endorse this, but to quote Douglas Murray, you really want to play that game? Are you aware that Emmett Till's father was hanged in the military for committing rape abroad?
No.
So, yeah, if this guy wants to go down that line, and I don't want to do that, because again, I think that morality resides in the individual, not in a racial collective, but if he wants to go down that line, that's punishment of the son for the sins of the father. Well, if he's thinking this is the exact same thing, then somehow that's justified.
But the thing is, you're still thinking of this in terms of morality. Yes. They're promoting this in terms of group power.
Yes.
Yeah.
This happened to our group, therefore it's justifiable that terrible things can be done from our group to your group. And that has been a persistent knife in the side of the American body politic for quite some time now, and it's been that way for a long time, right? It's been that way since before you were born.
What do you think the response would have been, like, in an alternate reality when, if his wife was black instead of white? Because they talk about a racist criminal justice system and they see this as, like, revenge.
Yeah, he would have been convicted because there would have been no racial revenge to have been had.
It's so crazy. Like,
yeah.
Again, the personal, the individual is completely obliterated from this. Mm-hmm. You know, a man attacking his wife, it's just black and white. It's just race. It's so disgusting.
Yeah, it's actually mad. And it's mad that they, he did it and he got away with it. And that's a good thing. Like, that's, like, you know, the very amateur position of Tariq Nasheed of, oh, he didn't do it, he's innocent. No one thinks that. And that's not what was underlying. I mean, we know that that's why he's making the argument for O.J. Simpson. But, like, there are lots of other people who are just far braver, just come out of it. And some of them will go on CNN and say it. It's actually kind of wild that this woman with a receding hairline has an opinion on
this. And it's also just worth noting how much was impacted by this trial, Jake. So many things happened. We saw policing changing here in the city. And it's also worth noting, because of that unrest, that racial unrest in the 90s, that is why so many people who may not have been invested in O.J. Simpson were just happy to see that someone who was rich and famous and black could get away with what other people did in the system as well, too.
Stephanie Elam, thanks so much.
And it's also
literally can get away with it.
It's also proof that the 2020 Summer of Love, the sort of cultural revolution
that
America underwent in this moment of madness, is a cycle. Because this has happened since the 60s and the civil rights riots, various staged protests that were centrally planned to push the civil rights bill along. And then in the 90s as well, with Rodney King and O.J. Simpson, because even she just said there, what happened by bringing this issue to public salience and allowing a criminal to get away with literal murder is that policing procedure was changed in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles therefore had gang and violent crime spikes ever since. Los Angeles is not exactly a very nice place unless Xi Jinping.
Some parts of it, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, and now you've got the Californication of the entirety of the US with police chiefs quitting.
Look at New York.
Yeah, quite. Yeah. All of the Democrat cities are over, and Democrat cities and Republican states now overrun by crime in the Los Angeles model. And it just keeps happening every 30 or so years.
Yeah, and so there's a general sort of pattern to this, as you say, and the pattern is to essentially make a martyr out of a black person who is accused of a crime and use that to kind of leverage less power of the law over the black community. Is that what the black community wants? Because, I mean, whenever anyone polls the black community and they're saying, well, do you want fewer police around or anything like that? I was like, hell no. What are you talking about? Why would I want that? What's the result of that? That is, of course, increased criminality in this community, increased problems for the community, and a lower standard of living for the people in the community. So the left and the sort of the white Democrats, the black civil rights leaders, and various media talking heads, all they're doing is creating a worse kind of environment for their own community because of a historic racial grievance that they carry through the generations.
Do they not see this, though? Like, when they speak to family members, like, if the black community as a whole actually doesn't agree with this like Marxist rhetoric and decriminalizing certain things and getting rid of the police. Surely when they speak to family members, surely they don't see that. But I guess as well, another thing, maybe it's because they're more like middle class, university educated. Maybe they don't see the aspect of like actually, you know, poor black communities who actually need this support.
So there's also a kind of in-group, not bias, but like pressure to not be seen to be cooperating with what is seen as the sort of white, wider out-group. And this is what they feel, frankly, I think they feel they're sticking it to them when this sort of thing happens. And it's just mental. And so you get just, again, just like wildly positive coverage of O.J. Simpson. And it's just like, but this guy, like even the black activists, like, no, he's a monster. Like, don't get me wrong. It's just good to stick it to the white system that he got away with it. And so CBS just like, well, yeah, look at this. Look at his great career. Look at a loving husband, father. I don't know what they're going to say. Like, what? Sorry, is that it's disgusting and grotesque that he's being represented like this after being at the nexus point of the open racial wound that America just carries along with it that can never be healed. Because there can never be an honest accounting of what has to be spoken about. And examples like this, examples like George Floyd, will continue every generation probably to spring up and just keep the wound open. And there's a huge institution, a whole class of people who are paid to keep the wound open. It's their job. You know, Mark Lamont Hill, all those sorts of people. It's their job, and they get privileged access to CNN. They get privileged access to just the media pundit landscape. They are promoted as, no, this is the legitimate voice of the black community on this issue.
This is why Rob Henderson, progenitor of Luxury Beliefs, always calls upon Defund the Police as the perfect example of this.
Yes, the most.
Because this is a gatekeeping mechanism to accrue to the civil rights advocates, self-appointed and media pundit class. Speaking opportunities, riches, recognition, and an unshakable placement in the power hierarchy, particularly in a state which treats crime not as a problem of individual morality, but as something to be therapized away or ameliorated with redistributed material conditions. So it at once expands the remit of the state, and it ensures that the people that are living with private security never have to face the consequences of defunded police in impoverished black communities ridden by a crime and father absence. And this is why they can get away with routinely canonizing figures like O.J. Simpson and George Floyd, career criminals, as people who had a positive impact on the history of American race relations.
Yeah, it's genuinely mad. And I'm just watching this thinking, what would Nigel Farage have to do to get that kind of write-up? You know, just, oh, you know, no, just don't worry about it. But anyway, so the only form of justice that people have been able to actually glean from this is through mocking him. I mean, this is a Saturday Night Live skit from the 90s where the joke is slowly built up over the framework of, oh, well, these are football tactics, which, as you can see, come out and spell, I did it, because everyone knew that he did it. And as you said at the beginning, Norm Macdonald was trending because Norm Macdonald never let it go.
He was sacked for this.
I know.
Yeah. This great compilation, yeah, one of the best ones, as soon as the verdict came in, he goes, well, it's official. Murder is now legal in the state of California.
Yeah.
And the crowd whooped and cheered,
yeah,
which I thought was very telling. But then when he went and did a stand-up set for a Football Players Awards, and he was speaking about one guy who had a track record career history of sprinting downfield, and he said, no one can ever take that away from you. Well, unless you kill your wife and a waiter. And everyone was putting their heads in their hands because the crowd was predominantly of color.
So Norm Macdonald did sterling work, never letting people forget that O.J. Simpson was a murderer. Doesn't matter what the courts say.
R.I.P.
Great. Okay, so I don't know if you guys are aware, but a 19-year-old woman in France has recently been in police custody after holding a sign saying "foreign rapists out." I was going to say that in French, but I can't. French.
I've not heard of this, no.
I think I admire Eric Zemmour for not learning a lick of English, and in return, I think we should pay him the same courtesy.
So basically, there's this crazy, like, feminist group, and they're called Collective Nemesis. But again, right. In France,
yeah.
I love how they just straight up just say it. Like, imagine an English group being like Collective Enemy, like that kind of thing. Like that would be crazy. They Schmittian could not feminism. Get away with that. Yeah, literally, like that is insane. So basically, this group, their sole goal is to raise awareness about the consequences of mass immigration that has been basically plaguing France, with countless attempts of sexual assault, rape. And these young girls, they're raising awareness of this. And the mayor, with this protest, the mayor, Anne Vignot, said that she opened an investigation and called it, she said that they want to fuel hatred against migrants. I don't understand how raising awareness about rape being bad is fueling hatred against migrants.
It's a pretty telling self-report for the exact character of the people they're bringing into France. But
Yeah. And
I'm against rape. Oh, you hate immigrants. Why is that?
And she opened an investigation provocation of hatred or violence against a group of people because of their origin or alleged breed.
That literally is, you know, telling on themselves. But okay, yeah, carry on.
And this is punishable by 1 year of an imprisonment or a fine of 45,000 euros.
That's what they did to Rene Camus. For inventing the great replacement theory.
Mm. Here's some statistics on the matter. France foreigners have committed 69% of robberies, violent crimes, and sexual assaults on public transport.
Clearly, the French transport system is to blame. Did you see that Fraser Nelson, apologist for the regime that he is, who I can't stand, yesterday tweeted out an article from The Spectator saying that, oh, there's been a curious rise in grenade attacks in Sweden. There's loads of young gangsters. Oh, there might be young gangsters here. I hate young gangsters. And I just said, oh, I suppose it's just one of those accidents, one of those forces of nature that just blew grenades into the hands of native Swedes again, Fraser, was it?
This isn't new either. Like, this has been happening for years.
He pointed out that it's second-generation immigrants. And he said, but all those that are saying this is a problem of immigration, well, they're second-generation. Everyone's going, that's worse. It means that they will not integrate and not settle, and they still hold ethnic grievances despite being born there. Do you not understand per capita, Fraser? Is that a thing?
Well, Fraser Nelson's in favour of open borders anyway. So. Yeah.
He plays Hatchling.
Yeah.
And again, another statistic, 63%. Of those arrested for sexual assault and 92% for petty theft in public transport were foreigners. Brilliant. I love the people we're importing to Europe. Greater. All these doctors and nurses. John put this, it's not just France. For example, migrants account for nearly half of rapists in Italy. Syrian migrants suspected of raping a 15-year-old Ukrainian refugee girl. They're bringing the best, I guess.
Well, I'd love to see what the numbers are for the UK, but as we know from sitting MPs now that have tried to look into the data, the ONS and the Home Office and that have said we don't collect it, and also it's too costly to publish it.
Mm.
So, again...
If you don't collect it, what would you be publishing? How do you know it's too costly?
I'm curious, that, isn't it?
Yeah, really, really curious. Just as another quick thing, sorry, just one more thing. Since when is a government department like, oh, we can't spend that money? No.
Hang on, no, we've got to spend it on studies on gay erotica in Europe. Just for multiple millions as came out last.
The idea that they're saying, well, I mean, we're trying to save you guys money.
Do you know we gave? Do you know we've started giving more money to the Taliban since they took over?
No.
Yeah. That was another thing that came out yesterday. 54% of our foreign aid budget is spent internally in the country on migrants.
Can't make it up. So I think we need to learn a lesson from the French controversial statement, but I think it's true.
I just can't get over the way the world is run. Sorry, go on.
So as you can see, people are actually rallying behind these women, these young girls, elected officials. I think this is quite a positive thing, and I'll get on to why we need to learn a lesson from the French in a second. But I think this amount of support, you couldn't really see that in the UK, could you?
No.
And again,
I can't imagine a single conservative politician having the balls to even tweet about it.
Can I ask a question of you, actually? So obviously we know some of the same people, but outside of political spaces, Do you have many young female friends who are expressing increasing concern about their personal safety because of immigration policy, but also feel too impolite to be able to say it?
Yeah, I don't think they feel too impolite. I think it's more so they just haven't made that connection because they don't, you know, they are literally colorblind towards this stuff. They just see it as individuals.
Right, so it's very much, there might be men here, I hate men.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not going to lie, though. I probably shouldn't say this, but the only times I've been catcalled, I normally wear my chunky autistic headphones, so I'm sort of out of it anyway. But the only times I've been catcalled, it's not by white people, and oftentimes it's been on public transport or in London.
Yeah, well, so my parents went down, I think it was to Eastbourne a few days ago, and they were talking to some of the locals, and they just said, oh yeah, as soon as when the sun's nice and there are young girls laying about on the beach, there are just brand new migrants that have been deployed in the town, walking along, taking photos. That's it. That's just the mentality.
It's just the way things are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does make you feel uncomfortable. Yeah, but you're not allowed to raise it. Are you? Yeah.
I guess not.
So again, just a bit more about this. The girl has been placed in police custody for inciting hatred, for having marched with a sign demanding the expulsion of foreigners who have committed rape, and for having recalled 4 to 6 women could have been spared if the OQTF were applied. I think that's some sort of French legislation.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to take a closer look at this group, because they're surprisingly based, and I don't think us as British people could get away with that. I think we're too sensible.
The French have a stronger identity of themselves as an ethnic group and a people than the English do. You can see this a lot in Camus' writings, for example. But I just feel very much like Gimli at this point, of where I'm looking at a set of French feminists and I'm like, I never thought I'd die standing alongside French feminists. Well, what about die fighting side by side with a friend? I can do that.
Well, if you say, like, these are young women, they're good optics, and I think this is something the right...
They're good optics.
They're good optics.
Yes, they are. They are quite attractive. Yes, yes.
You know, I'm pro pushing the women forward. I'm pro pushing attractive women forward. Yeah, yeah, I guess so. And again, it's like, they've got quite a big following, 25,000 followers. And I think that's quite impressive for an account literally dedicated to showing how mass immigration has impacted women in particular.
Amazed they're still on Instagram, frankly.
And it's organic support as well. Like, yeah. I think that's so impressive. Like,
well, I totally believe it. It's not like the regime's going to be like, right, we're going to funnel a bunch of money to these people and artificially boost them.
Yeah, unlike literally every left-wing organization ever. I wonder if France has the same type of system. But as you can see, like, thousands of likes. That is absolutely insane. Imagine a right-wing organization having that support. Or imagine even a left-wing organization having a support, because they're all just, like, funneled by the government pretty much, and the right's just pretty much dead.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. So, again, like, I think it's important to talk about...
I just love the title, sorry. Right-wing feminism. What's that? Being pro-woman.
Who wrote this article?
It's right-wing feminism. Oh, I see. Okay, carry on.
Well, it is quite a difference to Simone de Beauvoir's feminism, I'd argue.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Don't.
I'm sure Connor could have a thing.
If I say that name three times in a mirror, she'll summon herself behind me.
But I think it's interesting, because when we see a perception of left-wing feminism, it's all about concepts, it's all about abstract ideas about dismantling the patriarchy or being against all men without actually giving any genuine policy, because their policy would pretty much be literally kill all men based on what, like, the logical consequence of that. Whereas the right-wing feminists, again, being against rape, being against men going into prisons and toilets.
Can these ladies define a woman as well?
Yeah.
Just out of interest.
All of their objections are rooted in the sexed realist recognition of biological power differences between men and women that are just physical. It's not a conspiratorial patriarchal thing.
Yeah.
As my friend Mary says, patriarchy in the left-wing mind often breaks down to embodied sex differences that I don't like.
Mm.
At least they recognize, well, yeah, I'm not a bloke, and therefore I love them, but sometimes keep some of the rapey ones away from me.
Yeah, it's the same, the Posey Parker position, which is far more reasonable because it makes sense and it dovetails nicely with the conservative position of, yeah, that's all true, therefore we should do that.
And it makes a considerate request of men as well to be the people protecting those spaces. Because I was talking to Sal, whose case is currently going on in Australia, where a biological man tried to use her female-only social media app. And she was saying, yeah, I want men's only spaces so that men can learn to be men. And then when we make the considerate demand that they stand as the bouncers outside our female-only spaces, they all feel sentimentally attached to us and extend us the same consideration and want to do it. And it's like, yeah, shock, decent blokes want to stop women being preyed upon by creepy blokes.
And I'm just picturing Harry Miller. But the way things were done for the last 5, 10, 20, 100,000 years, we've rationalized our way around to maybe that worked. It's like, yeah, of course that worked. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's a very valid point. And I think, again, the left-wing feminism doesn't want to recognize gender differences. And they're annoyed when the consequences of these gender differences, for example, mass immigration, for example, the sexual revolution and the impact. Maybe guys don't think the same as women, and maybe we're not hardwired the same way, and guys will just use you for sex if you just offer it to them. Like, shocker, I know.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I'm a big
one. Come on. Yeah. Have you got a study for that, I guess? You know.
But I think it's interesting because women are literally carrying the right wing. Like, I think it's very indicative that the biggest political movement on the right since Brexit has been carried out by left-wing feminist lesbians. I think that says a lot about the right.
It says a lot about the men on the right, doesn't it?
No, I don't think it does.
Go on.
And this is because who's enforcing the mandates of the prior generation of feminists who got us this far?
The Conservative Party.
Yeah, the state. So that's usually left-wing men with guns who are threatening to kick down your door if you do something Hope Not Hate doesn't like. So I don't think it's right-wing men's fault at all. I think it's basically the government stooges that therefore enforce left-wing law. And I have I have some sympathy for the sex realist feminists. You know, I'm friends with some of them. But for J.K. Rowling and the like, I'm happy that she's raising salience of the issue. But she did get us here. Like, all of the women that were...
Oh, yeah, she was happily on the train until it turned on her.
Mm. Yeah, until...
She's like, well, yeah, she was, like, pro-refugee, wasn't
she? Oh, yeah,
yeah. Oh, yeah, she said anyone who voted Brexit was Voldemort. But it's like the first wave... Feminists are, we want to be equal to men. Second wave, we don't need men. The third wave, we're better than men. And the fourth wave is, now we are men. And they're like, no, we wanted to stay at the third wave. We wanted to stay when we're just better than men. It's like, you don't get that, sweetheart. I'm afraid
you're on the slippery slope.
There.
You don't get to stop halfway.
Yeah. I hate the expression, woke has gone too far. It's like, no, the issue is woke, not the fact that it's gone too far. Like, the issue is in the root of itself. And you can see this with, like, the feminists, the TERF. Like, I have a lot of time for TERFs. But I think
they are bonkers, though. I mean, I like a lot of them, but like a lot of them are just mental as well.
Helen Joyce is very nice. Julie Bindle just hates men.
Yeah.
Julie Bindle's a political lesbian, isn't she?
Yes.
Yeah. So there we go. As I said, some of them are just bonkers, but some of them are quite nice.
Yeah, I'm on board with her for the slut shaming, but the moment she says and transgenderism is a men's rights activism, and I'm just like, just do one.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, they say transgenderism is a result of misogyny. Like, no, it's not. It's a result of mentally ill weirdos.
If anything, it's a result of venerating women, right? Mm. It's a result of recognizing the superior position that women have and dignity that they have in society at the moment.
For the trans maxes, yes. Also for the autogynephiles, they see women as a sort of...
Oh, well, for them it's a fetish, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. But you have to sort of venerate women in a weird,
creepy
way.
But is that not because of watching porn?
It is, yes.
I wouldn't say porn's venerating women.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that the autogynephiles are venerating women. Because
there's a degree of disgusting worship there.
Sure, but it's also, I think, about debauching them as well, rather than honoring them. So, but the trans maxes definitely do venerate women.
Yeah. 100%. And it's also like with the Equality Act, like a lot of TERFs put the Equality Act on like this pedestal, and it's like, no, again, this is the issue. We need to abolish the Equality Act. It's not enough to amend it.
This is why the men are in your bathrooms.
Yeah, literally. But they don't seem to see that. And I think this is why we can't have people who are TERFs and also who are liberals as well, like with the gay and lesbian stuff. Like, I don't think they should be at the front of the movement against gender ideology, because again, this is the result of their ideology just to the extreme.
So who should be at the front?
The right-wing men.
Yeah, straight white men. Yeah, I knew you were going to say it.
Well, again, like if they stand up, sure. But I thought it would be interesting to see actually why we need a based feminist movement against immigrants in the UK. So here are some recent statistics. This interesting study.
58% white. Yeah, right.
But also 58% white. What's the proportion to population?
37% English.
But, yeah, and this counts Albanians as well as whites. So homicide offences.
Jesus.
30% white, 60% black. Great. And then there's gun offences, 64% black, 26% white. Knife offences, 36, 47. I love even though whites are the majority, that they're still the minority in this.
I mean, whites being a broad racial category, yes, but like English in particular, no.
Yeah. Robbery offences, 32 to 52. Sexual offences, and again, it makes sense because we're the majority.
But per capita. But also, if you can scroll down slightly, right? So Asian is nearly neck and neck in there. And all other crimes, they haven't been represented proportionate to population. Asian is such a deceptive category because that's putting in the Japanese, the Chinese, the Sikhs, as well as Pakistani Muslim rapists, which we know disproportionately are culpable. So
why is the little old lady running the Thai restaurant involved in all of this?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
like, sorry. Yeah.
Don't go to a nail bar. You might get molested. Like, no.
Yeah.
So I think it's just important to put
this
out there.
It's just quite a big place, actually.
Yeah.
And again, when we look at our biggest... not anti-immigrant movements, I guess, on the right. They're an absolute failure. Richard Tice.
Yep. Yep.
Richard, so, Richard, you need to deselect candidate white. Well, this time he's dead.
Yeah, quite. Did you? It feels like the you know, the really drained out man and the woman going like that. It's like, honey, it's 4 o'clock. It's time to deselect another candidate.
Yeah.
Yes, honey.
Yeah. But I mean, at least this, you've got a good reason to deselect this one.
Well, I just can't get over what he says about his own candidates, the people who have spent time and effort. You know, they're going to dedicate so many hours of volunteering, which probably won't even lead to them becoming an MP or whatever. These are the people who are at their grassroots movement. You know, they want to make a difference. And he calls them morons and muppets in this interview.
No, I will does say. He? Yeah, he does. Yeah. I will say. So there's, I want to draw a distinction
Jesus
between.
Jesus Christ, Richard.
I want to draw a distinction between some of the candidates were deselected, like Beau, who were deselected because jokes are taken out of context and they didn't have the brain power to discern that he wasn't going to annex Scotland. And also some of the other candidates who were, shall we say, like fundamentally unserious people, they would not have made good MPs, but the objection still stands that for both of those groups, the person setting the tone for who should belong to an anti-establishment movement should not be a communist front group funded by the Labour Party and the Home Office. And he wants to destroy the Home Office anyway. So why is he taking their lead on their attack talk? I mean, it's infuriating.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it would be quite telling. Like, for example, I'll also say, like, with Beau, for example, I think he wrote for the Mallard before he got into reform. And so surely they should have vetted that beforehand. And it just shows, like,
there was nothing in that article that Reformer disagreed with anyway. The party policy was just basically what he'd already written.
Yeah,
it's a
exactly.
quick side. But, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just because Hope Not Hate have an issue with it, and it just shows absolute cowardice.
Well, the other thing that I would really want to point attention to as well is that, so two things here, and again, I don't want to be just blatantly rude to Richard, but, well, fair enough. But first of all, Reform UK is not a party, it's a business.
Yeah. How is it that they can stand candidates then? I don't understand how that works.
Because it means that you can spend less in each constituency according to the Electoral Commission, but you can still stand them as a candidate. So they're just not complying with the Electoral Commission's rules that give them more leeway were they allowed to go through it.
Okay.
So you can still do it. And the other thing is that Richard Tice and Isabel Oakeshott have a long-standing relationship. And Isabel Oakeshott is a contributor to Talk TV. She is noted for being the person who leaked Matt Hancock's WhatsApp messages. But before she did that, she was going to write the book with him. And since, she's been getting on Talk TV and saying, well, Rishi Sunak's under a lot of pressure. We have to be more understanding to him. So and I have heard from behind the scenes that Isabel herself has vetoed candidates that Nigel himself has suggested. So she has quite a lot of power. And so if someone who is stumping for the current Conservative government is sleeping with the head of the party and saying who can be candidates and who can't, it seems to be a bit self-defeating.
Yeah, I think it's just such a shame. Like there's a reason why I don't want to like rally for reform. And I'm strongly like, I don't want other people to, because we've had disappointments after disappointments after disappointment. Everyone was like up in arms about Brexit. You know, there was so much momentum behind that. Disappointment. Then Boris 2019. I remember my whole class, I was doing my A-levels at the time. My whole class was like literally like rallying behind it. Disappointment. Even like the Liz Truss achievements, if you want to call it that. disappointment. And so I don't know how much we can have. And it's like, sorry for being skeptical, you know? And it's just an absolute joke. And again, like, hope, not hate.
Yeah. I mean, they're literally taking a victory lap. Yeah.
Yeah. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating. Yeah.
I mean, they know it. They're proud of it. Why wouldn't they be? Yeah.
I hate the word, like, dance Richard Tice is having. On one hand, like, hope, not hate, they're the most awful thing in the world. And on the next, like, they're taking advice, you know. See, reform isn't the only bad one because hope, not hate, did a hit piece on a Conservative MP. Like, make up your mind.
It's also really, really painful, right? So, hope, not hate, and only just going out and actively campaigning on doorsteps now and the like. The fact that Tice has given them jurisdiction over this means that he has now set the standard that the most powerful alternative party is indistinguishable from the mainstream. And so this is why it's so disappointing. He has set back the nudging of the Overton window by a substantial degree. And also, so something also very relevant. Paul Marshall, who has retweeted you,
yes,
is now probably stepping away from GB News. Yes. So this now leaves GB News as the sole quote-unquote right-wing broadcast channel that has hired Tice, Lee Anderson, Ben Habib. So most of Reform UK are working for GB, and now you've got this bland flavour going to the next Labour government where the so-called dissident right-wing party that's rising in the polls is also taking its lead from Labour's attack dog. So like we're basically just shut out. This way, we keep being told, oh, start a party. It's like, we can't. No, I mean,
we probably could.
Not for the Electoral Commission. They won't even bloody let Reform be vindicated for it. Then they won't let us.
No, I think we could. I think that we would be able to. It's just a lot of time, money, and effort.
And I don't think it would go anywhere, in all honesty. I don't think the momentum's there, especially since Reform is like getting the crumb off momentum that's there. It's honestly such a joke. But this is why I want to bring it back to these crazy right-wing feminists in France. Like, when that girl had the sign saying foreign rapists out, her whole organization, all the right, could have been like, no, we disavow. Mm. But no, they stood by her. Elective officials stood by her. We don't see that in the UK.
We don't have that. We don't have any of it.
I remember Sam Mealy, like, I know he's not the best optical guy. Mm. However, not many people came out in defense of him. Like Toby Young, for example, on the Daily Skeptic, he published an article, or someone who published an article under the Daily Skeptic, which he runs, saying it's right that he's arrested, it's right that he's locked up.
That author was also sharing hope, not hate.
Yeah, which shows how deep the rot is. Mm. I think it's very telling that we don't rally behind these people, and we don't have that same solidarity, we don't have that fraternity that the French have.
Well, ours are all Blairites.
Oh, not just that as well. I'll be careful.
And cowards.
Choice here. Lots of people in the Westminster bubble are also not of reputable character. Mm. They're not only not our political friends, but personally, they've all got a lot of muck on them, as we've seen with the recent defence of William Ragg by the cabinet. And lots of people in the anti-woke space have also got similar dirt on them for impropriety. Nobody at the Lotus Eaters has a similar thing. Nobody, I don't think we really affiliate with, is constantly worried about being blackmailed politically. And I think there are definitely some people that are orbiting the anti-establishment sphere that are worried that dirt on them will also come out. And so that is also holding us back.
Mm. Yeah. I honestly don't know what the solution is with this. Like, it's so blackpilling. And again, when, like, even the key guys, like Reform, or even kind of very wet on a lot of issues. Even like net zero immigration. Like net zero immigration still means that you're having 400,000 people come over. Like that is not enough.
Yeah.
Like that is insane. So instead of leaving it on a black pill, I kind of wanted to leave it on something funny and share some good memes about Nick Lawls who runs
That's a good
Got Hate.
Yeah. I think though, not to blackpill people, but like on a long enough timeline, there's hope. Because oh dear, this election's a write-off. It's pretty obvious, but that doesn't mean that we can't sort of save ourselves for future planning.
Any last thoughts, Carl?
No, I just hate the fact that Tice basically went on GB News and was like, "Oh well, we thank Hope Not Hate in the media for checking our candidates for us. It's like,
yeah, you've set them up as the authority.
Yeah, you literally don't thank them when they're whipping you.
Oh, well, that was the other thing I forgot as well. He then turned around and spent the entire time going, but the left, the real racist. Yeah. Why haven't the Labour Party kicked out the pandas? It's like, they don't care about hypocrisy, Richard. It's hierarchy. They just want to destroy you. This is a talking point from like 5-10 years ago.
And also, if you'd done nothing, you'd still be going up in the polls.
Yes, yes.
You'd just done nothing, you'd have your activist base and you'd be going up in the polls. Your party would feel really good about everything. We'd be singing your praises.
Yeah. Why is Hope Not Hate having a go at George Galloway because of anti-Semitism? Because they're literally run by communists. Why would they attack left-wing people?
Yeah, yeah.
Again, it's this like centrist liberalism. But anyway, in conclusion, stick to your principles, I guess. John's put this. Please follow me on Twitter and also Substack. Thanks.
Good stuff. Let's go to the video comments.
Today's California native is Fritillaria affans. Frits are known for having a lot of unique checkerboard patterns, and affans can be anywhere from nearly all green to all black. This flower is common to California, Oregon, and Washington, and even into Idaho and Canada a little. So if you live there, go on a hike in an area nearest to the coast and keep an eye out. Now is in the middle of their blooming season. Its bulb and roots are both edible, raw or cooked, and it's a good thing to note for the coming collapse of society.
I was about to say, California refugee always brightens my Friday with his botany, and then he talks about societal collapse where we're all being plants.
Yeah, but this is good news for when you're watching or living through Fallout.
It's yeah, quite. On to the next one, I suppose.
Right, so now you all know never to buy Red Delicious, Golden Delicious, or especially Granny Smith. What do you have instead? Well, even if you've got a very small garden, you can grow a wonderful tree called a Worcester Pearmain, which produce medium to small-sized, bright red apples that taste like strawberries. Yes, what? You can swap your horrible sour green potato for English apples that taste like strawberries, and I'll show you how to grow them later in the year.
That sounds awesome.
I don't like the taste of strawberries. I don't eat apples.
Anyway. I like strawberries.
They give me really bad indigestion. But pink ladies are the best ones. Just saying. Apple war, I suppose. I don't have any context for what was wrong with the other apples. Was it they're imported from abroad or something?
I've no idea. I assume they're foreign, but like,
okay, right.
Bad thing must be foreign.
Right. Anyway, I suppose onto the written comments then. Are we doing our each individual segment?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, fantastic. Alex Ogle, in a monologue or in a dialogue, you have multiple voices in your head?
We'll discuss it on the...
Okay. Adam. All right. Neo and Realist for $1. Mega statues in Britain, Cole. Make it happen.
Yeah, this is the thing. The general tone of the right is very defeatist. And it's like, okay, why are we so defeatist? Because we don't have bloody heroes. And so I'm really coming around to the, okay, who would we build a statue to? And it's got to be Nigel Farage, right? We've got to build a statue of Farage.
It's going to be one
when
of,
he dies.
You know, Powell.
Sure, but like contemporary hero. Right?
Yes, okay.
Like Bukele seems to be doing good so far.
Yep.
He keeps doing great statue of him, but that's in like 40 years' time. But Farage, not that long in the future, like 20 years' time or something like that. So I guess he's got to be the guy, assuming he doesn't do something rubbish. But he's just like the best we've got.
Yeah.
But we need to be thinking about this because these sort of monuments impact the people around them. And that's why the left do them. That they know what the value of putting up a statue of a person is. Like, why the hell would I want, was it Emil Pankhurst or something in Parliament Square? So courage caused courage everywhere. Oh, shut up.
Terrorist.
Yeah, you're an actual terrorist and you literally are awful.
So same with Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
Same with Abraham Lincoln. Like, why does he have a statue in Parliament Square when... The entire purpose of that is just to hang the American race narrative implacably over Britain's head.
I don't know. But the point is, they know the power of statues and we don't. So we have to build giant statues. I mean, for example, I really like the fact that Malmesbury has this society called the Freemen of Malmesbury, which is where in like 954 AD, Æthelstan defeated the giant coalition of English rebels in the north. Well, not rebels, but English in the north, Danes, Welsh, Strathclyde, Scots, probably some Irish, and the men of Malmesbury distinguished themselves. And so he gave them the charter of the city, the Freemen of Malmesbury. And so to this day, over 1,000 years later, this society still exists. And you have to be born either the son of a man of Malmesbury or you marry the daughter of one to join it. Well, okay, don't we need a 100-foot tall statue of Æthelstan outside of Malmesbury then? You know, I think that'd be great, and I don't see why we don't have it.
It'd be something useful for Parliament as well. So,
but like, it'd be a tourist thing, like a giant goddamn stone statue of Æthelstan. Like, you'd be able to see it from the motorways. You're like, what the hell's that?
Yeah,
like,
true.
You know,
so for
example, awesome.
You've been around DC, yes?
Yeah.
Have you been in the Capitol building?
No.
Okay, so what they've got is they've got a hall of statues all throughout the capital.
Yeah, I know.
And each state can donate 2 statues. And I think that would just be a great for like the counties to nominate a historical hero and have it in Parliament Square. So create like a whole statue guard.
That would be amazing. Why not? You know, rather than a bunch of foreign statues.
Kent should be Charles Dickens, I think.
Yeah, and can we not have statues of Hengist and Horsa? At the mouth of the Thames, like in Lord of the Rings, those giant statues, you know, going like that. You know, we could do that. There's nothing stopping us doing that. We have the technology. You know, it's just building something out of stone. We can do this.
If you build it, the migrants will not come.
Exactly, you know, exactly. And it'd be a great thing to, people are like, okay, what's the deal with that? Oh, these are the English leaders, the Anglo-Saxon leaders who arrived in like 450 AD. When the English first came to this island. I said, okay, isn't that worth commemorating? You know, don't we? Like, I spoke to Lambda the other day and he'd never even heard of them. It's like, how the hell is it, you know, people in right wing spaces can never even heard of these people. So it's just, there's a lot we could do and we should do. And when we win, we will.
Yeah. Keeps alive the story that we decide to tell ourselves. Speaking of which, Fleet Lord Avatar just sends $20 and says, good. I agree. Good, sir. There we go. Okay, Baron von Warhawk. We've been saying for years the trans movement would be remembered the same way as the lobotomy, and now we're seeing the start of this. It's good the tide is starting to shift against trans pseudoscience, but should never have gotten this bad to begin with, and we must never forget who started and led the movement. A lot of children are on their hands. We can never let these people off the hook. Yes, Constantine Kissin tweeted out yesterday, again, friend of the show, but he is a centrist dad, and he said that we need a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. First of all, that commission covered up for the crimes of black nationalist communist terrorists like Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, if we have a Truth and Reconciliation
I just said we need a Nuremberg trial.
Maybe something like that, yeah.
The medical crimes are akin to that done by Joseph Fritzl, so I think it's more than
Fritzl.
Fair.
I mean,
not Goebbels.
Fritzl.
Goebbels, yeah. Sorry, I was getting my weird, creepy Germanic Austrians. No, hang on. It wasn't Goebbels. It was who was the angel of death?
I know that
Mengele.
Yeah,
Joseph Mengele. Yeah. Everyone's called bloody Joseph. Yeah. Baron von Warhawk. Turns out chopping body parts off children and playing along with their delusions are bad for their health. Who knew? Every good parent.
Yeah.
Omar Awad. There's some sort of Pascal's wager where it's easier to believe the trans propaganda than come to terms with the fact that there is a commercial and political incentive to maintain the industrialized and systematic abuse of children. Yes, and the Overton window has now been moved so far because we've now got a non-political report that it's now safe for these people to jump on that bandwagon and pretend they were TERFs all along.
Yeah, it's like the Cassie J report. Is it Cassie J? The what was the Rotherham report? It's not Cassie J. It's
I know what one
Alexis J. I think it was.
Yeah, that was this the one that was commissioned under?
In 2014.
No,
like, until then you couldn't really talk about it. But then it was like, oh yeah, then this all has happened.
Right.
And it kind of opened the floodgate to being like, okay, yeah, maybe a certain unmentionable man was right about everything, actually.
Yeah, quite. Northbud. Recently, the Melbourne Royal Hospital approved affirmative care, and some states have quietly passed legislation to ban therapists to be allowed to talk to those who need talking to, and instead of the law, affirm them instead of disagreeing and getting to root cause of these problems. I hope this finds its way quickly to Australia instead of 3 years down the track. Well, quite. And I also hope that Sal Grover's lawsuit going through at the moment will set the precedent for sex in law for that to happen. Lord Nerevar, when we say bring back hanging, it really is in response to stories like Tavistock. If people are found guilty, not fed posting. You need criminal trials first, isn't it? Not to get all bow on you, but what is evil, what evil, spineless and contemptuous individuals. Absolutely true. There's no pit of hell too deep for people of such low morals. Quite. I think without prescribing any solutions, Polly Carmichael is truly the villain in this entire story. Someone online, whoever hurt these children will, no one who ever hurt these children will ever be punished. Now that is the thing I'm genuinely worried about.
And that's true. I think they're correct on that.
Yeah, same with lockdown.
I don't think it's going to happen.
There's too many people that have
too many vested interests. Yeah.
Yeah, quite. And also the deep pockets of the gender ideology industry will not be depleted for many years. So even if lawsuits are passed, they will be insulated from consequences.
Yeah.
But I wish the likes of Richie Herron and Kira Bell luck in changing this sort of stuff.
Northants Knight says, the OJ issue reinforces how grievance mongers will never let the ball go if they think they can get something out of it, whether it's material or ideological, material gain or ideological promotion. But it's the thing that bothers me is that this is just something that is racially carried by the black community in their consciousness. It's like, look, until that can be talked about, the issue can never go away.
This is what Harry and I were talking about with Black Panther. Black Panther was made well over $1 billion at the box office. Mm. There were charity initiatives to take black kids out to see it. And the predominant belief was not the king of the black nation that then decided to not hate white people and be a member of his family, was a sympathetic character. It was the black Hitler who wanted to, who killed his girlfriend, who was fatherless.
Literally name is Killmonger.
Yeah, and wanted to wipe out white people because of some abstract grievance for slavery. It's so sympathetic to the point where the lead actor playing Black Panther said he identified with Killmonger more than his own character. So, not good.
And it doesn't even make sense from an internal consistency point of view. Well, if Wakanda was never colonized, why do you hate white people? Anyway, Stephen Welsh says, why are all black martyrs literal criminals? And the answer to that is, of course, because the criminal justice system is actually not racially prejudicing. If it were an evil racist organization, it'd be easy to find a black martyr who is literally not a criminal, who literally didn't deserve what happened to them, and therefore they would have a just cause. The problem is, it doesn't really exist because actually the justice system is okay, generally. At least when it comes to dealing with minority groups. In fact, it's far too soft a touch, it seems.
But they think every single one is Michael Clark Duncan from Green Mile.
Yeah, and so the easiest people to hold up as martyrs and the only ones who really get any attention are those people who are doing something wrong, like scoffing fentanyl. Or what was it that Rodney King did? I can't remember what he did. He did something, I can't remember what it was. But,
he was intoxicated and speeding and then tried to resist arrest.
Yeah, there was
scuffle with police officers.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying him getting his ass kicked is nice. And obviously, it does represent a pattern of behavior that the LAPD had demonstrated towards the black community. But he wasn't a good guy. But anyway, Kevin Fox says, the relatives of the victims won the rights to OJ's book as a settlement and released it with the I did it in bold and tiny indistinct lettering for the rest of the title. Yeah, that's true. There are a few different sort of titles, but one is I did it with it, if being a very small bit in the eye at the beginning. And so you have to look close to see. And so it just looks like I did it. And it's like, yeah, we know. Everyone knows, dude.
Who's the comedian with the short red hair? She's an American, but she lives in the UK. It's like Ruby something.
Is Ruby Wax?
Might be. So she went out in the early 2000s.
I saw this. Yeah.
OJ. I saw this clip circulating and he looks in the camera and says, I didn't do it. And then he thought, on the day that she's flying out, what would be really funny is to turn up at her hotel door, knock on it, and recreate the stabbing scene from Psycho. It's like...
funny.
Why? Weird that.
Carl is built like a mini fridge, am I? Okay. OJ has not been found guilty of being alive. Has been found not guilty of being alive. It's a shame he died not knowing who killed his wife. Yeah, well, like I said, the whole thing is just, I really hate how there's just this broad injustice. And it's the same with George Floyd, to be honest. You know, like, you know, I've got no care in the world for Derek Chauvin, but he was obviously just persecuted. And so it's like, right. Yeah, there we go. These broad injustices just underpin our civilization at this point.
Right. Have you got those on the screen?
I don't think so. Can you read it out, please?
That's okay. Yeah, no problem. Captain Charlie the Beagle. Regarding trans women invading women's spaces, is anyone surprised? For years, feminists have been making every effort to invade men's spaces in the name of equality. These days, men are doing the same, but suddenly it's a bad thing and it needs to be stopped. Also, as an aside, if you ever wanted proof of the biological differences between men and women, just have a look at how many trans men and trans women are in sports and which one are setting the records. They've made the rod for their own back so they can live with it. So The reason I don't like that is it perpetuates the same sort of group grievance narrative. And I think it makes men look needlessly vindictive when we should have a paternalistic concern for women. We should be saying, yeah, that was silly, wasn't it? That was very silly. Now, if you are willing to fork over that power, I will kick them out of the space for you. Rather than go, well, you made your bed, lie in it. I don't think there's a need to be vicious on our part.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it just, there's still something quite weak about the position that I can't put my finger on.
I think as well, when it comes to men and women's spaces, not that I'm pro getting rid of men's space, I think men's spaces are very important. I say that I am going on Les Hour again, which is but I think the difference is with women's spaces, when we think of domestic violence centers, when we think of prisons, when we think of toilets, they're needed because women's safety is at risk, whereas with men it's because again, which is still important, but it's because of, like, you know, the connection guys have together is a lot different when women are in the room. So there is that where it's a bit different. And obviously, I'd say one is more important than the other, just because I think safety is probably more important than, you know, having a general vibe. But I think both are still important.
I don't think it's just general vibe. I mean, obviously, the physical differences are the pronounced reason for it. But of course, what we have seen with a rise in mixed sex cohabitation and socializing is a rise in false abuse and rape allegations. Mm. And so it just, in a general course of men only wanting to socialize with men, they may want to avoid those instances. It's not nearly the same physical threat as a rapist walking into a woman's changing room, but that is a concern also guys will want to express by being just around men.
Yeah, it's like Mike Pence said about, you know, he wouldn't go into a room alone with a woman.
He wouldn't go to dinner with a woman who wasn't his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's eminently sensible. And I say that having...
Well, it avoids the appearance of impropriety.
Quite. AK, Tice tweeted advocating for vaccine passports. I know because Lotus Eaters covered it in 2021.
I actually forgot all about that.
Did he advocate for vaccine passports?
I guess he must have done.
I remember the video where he and David Ball, and they've since spent ages trying to backtrack on it, advocated for compulsory vaccination. Yeah. Have you seen that?
No, I can't. Well, I mean, I can't remember it.
Right, yeah. I don't remember the vaccine passport one, but then the compulsory vaccination one's even worse. So, oh, good, yes.
Mm.
Baron von Vorkork. They call themselves feminists, but they import millions of men from the most rapey parts of the world. But something isn't right. My personal theory is that they aren't satisfied with modern European bug men that they helped to create and see these third world rapists as sexy bad boys. I don't think so at all.
No.
Mainly because the rates of interracial relationship have not gone up and they're not actually sleeping with them. A lot of what's happened is, if you read Sarah Hill's book on birth control, birth control shuts off the threat detection response for young women.
Mm.
And so they actually cannot gauge this being a threat.
And also, like, the emotional side as well. Like, if you do consider a lot of these people coming over as, like, a lot of people can't distinguish between, like, illegal immigrants and legal immigrants. And when they think of illegal immigrants, they think of, like, this poor woman from a war-torn country with, like, a baby in her hand coming over, not the reality of it, which is, like, these military-age men coming over. Yeah. Even legally, that is. And so I think it's more of, like, the compassion and empathy side of it as well. I think that's why women are pro it. I don't think it's a sexual thing, no. Although I'd argue a lot of Western men are, so.
I mean, if they work for Kef Kale, it definitely is.
Yeah.
But they're certainly not young.
Well, that's fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Lord Nerevar, always ready to drag reform through the mud. It shouldn't have to be at the expense of Western nations that we do it, though. Reform is the best chance at effecting some change in these aisles, and now they've been revealed to be as cuckolds. What can we do? Tice deserves every second of kicking he gets from the public about this.
Yeah, but the problem is he's going to say, thank you, can I have another?
Well, because he literally did tweet, well, yeah. I'm getting blasted by the far right and the far left, therefore I'm correct. And it's like, no, Richard. Like,
I'm the true centrist Blairite, says Richard Tice.
I think he wants to be liked on the Westminster dinner party circuit.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's it. And also, again, much like, and, you know, I don't want to disparage.
Well, again, Isabel's going to be in his ear. Richard.
Yeah.
Lady Macbeth.
Yeah. Like, have you seen what they've been tweeting at me? Oh, God.
It's also like they've all got TV spots. They've all got paid contracts.
Yeah.
Isabel does. All the Reform UK guys do.
Yeah.
David Ball works for Talk TV. And so it's more comfortable sort of like shouting from within the tent than actually changing the colour of the tent.
How many kids does Tice have?
I don't know. I know Isabel's got two boys.
Right.
Not with together. They both cheated on their spouses. Not good.
Yeah.
Not good. Average Westminster behaviour. Through the day, I can't imagine telling people that being against rape makes them evil, but then again, I'm not an insane psychopath for all that you know. Isn't Rue the Day the one that fancies Beau? I do.
I have no idea.
Oh, Sophie Liv as well. Unironically, every single person who would stalk and grab me in London were middle-aged, Middle Eastern men, every single one. Except one giant black man who would not let me leave a pub. That's very strange. White native English men were always my protectors, even made sure I made it home to my hotel safely and escorting me the entire way. These were wonderful Englishmen and they all knew, and the fact that women can't see it is very, very sad.
Mm.
Quite right.
Have you seen that? It must be really old now. But that video of this woman like going through a bad part of American City and she keeps on getting catcalled and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I wonder who's catcalling her.
Well, if you watch it, you can see.
Yeah. Trends.
I've never seen anyone catcall.
I've seen some.
Never witnessed it.
I've seen some white van men, like, be a girl walking down the street. But that's just sort of low impulse control primitive behavior.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If we're talking about what that's more common and culturally accepted among, are we shocked that it's from places in the world that see the lives of women and girls as instrumental to the power and pleasure of some very creepy blokes? But
yeah.
Anyway. Thanks for being on, Jess. Appreciate it. We've run up against time. On that fun note, if you're listening live in half an hour, we will be back with Lads Hour, which Carl's presenting.
Yes, indeed.
Good fun about internal monologues. If you haven't subscribed yet, you still have half an hour to do so, and you can watch us. Otherwise, have a lovely weekend. We'll be back on Monday at 1 o'clock. Take care and goodbye.